Good morning, everybody. Good morning. As Mike said, my name is Robin Berkeley. This is, I think, the third anniversary of joining the church for me. So I was really honored to be asked to speak on MLK Sunday for a variety of reasons. A, because he's just such a wonderful and inspirational person, but also because diversity and social justice is something that is a part of, you know, my academic life in terms of my research and my teaching, but also is something that I strive for every day, and certainly as the mother of mixed race children, my children have greatly benefited from his wonderful work. So there were, to lightly put it, about a gazillion things I could have spoke about, because he has so much to offer us. And I decided today I wanted to connect to that eulogy, which Michelle so beautifully read, connecting it with some of the issues and concerns we've been seeing lately in the news and in the public media about some of the violence going on out there and what we can do personally to address that. So I'm going to start with some of Martin Luther King's words from his I Have a Dream speech, and I will close with that as well later today. Okay. I say to you today, my friends, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Now, if you say these words or you read them, you can hear his voice. It's very firm, it's resolved, it's confident, it's charismatic. He is a gifted orator and an inspiration to all of us. As Kleber, our pastor, has mentioned in previous services, our little community, as well as the community at large, has been pretty rocked with tragedies of violence, of pain and suffering, and of deep loss. And I know myself, I have felt heavy and burdened emotionally in a way I have never experienced before. And it feels like we're surrounded by chaos, and no matter how hard I try, it seems to infiltrate my life and seed despair and frustration. And I'm not going to be a Debbie Downer here, I promise, because the rest of the sermon will be much more uplifting. But you gotta, you know, set where we're at here. There is an energy out there. We've got wars, new wars in Mali, Syria, school shootings, death of loved ones. You know, and so we inhale, we exhale, we pick ourselves up each day, we move forward, and perhaps wondering, how did we get here and why? And we try to forgive ourselves for not being all together and in complete control of our lives. But in reality, we're human, and we're all on this amazing human journey, the ups and the downs, the joys and the tragedies. But what can we learn from this reflection in this chaos? I was drawn to the eulogy for the martyred children after hearing of the Newtown, Connecticut massacre, and I was drawn to these two particular sentences that had me thinking about the Reverend King's message and wondering why this message resonated for me even 40 years after it was first delivered. And here are those words. They say to us that we must be concerned not merely about who murdered them, but about the system, the way of life, the philosophy which produced the murderers. Their death says to us that we must work passionately and unrelentingly for the realization of the American dream. This idea of an American dream is a common theme, obviously, for Dr. King. But what does that mean, really? It's different for all of us, obviously. We all come from different perspectives, and there's no real simple answer to that question. But really the thing that spoke to me was this concern that Dr. King had about the philosophy that produced the murders, and not just those murders, but the murders in Newtown and other things that we've been seeing in recent days. They say the numbers of murders in society have stayed constant, and we aren't necessarily a more violent society, but I wonder why I feel it so much more so now than I ever have. Maybe it's because we live in a hugely polarized society, rich versus poor, haves versus have-nots, liberals versus conservatives, straights versus gays, gender normative versus transgender. We're a strange society because we are, in the United States, among the most individualistic of all cultures, yet we strive to put ourselves into groups for identity, and these groups tend to be very black and white. They're typically in a juxtaposition to another group that is different from them, so it becomes us versus them. There is little room for rainbow colors and shades of gray, and when we spend so much time thinking about what separates us, we don't give enough time and attention to what unites us. So let me share with you something my brother wrote on Facebook not long ago that I think it sort of informs this discussion. To place this in context, this was right after the Newtown, Connecticut shootings, and my brother, as did I, knew many people affected because we grew up there. He's younger than me. He became a born-again Christian at the age of 16, approximately. He studied in Israel, made friends with Palestinians in the old city of Jerusalem, lived abroad in Europe and in Japan, and did his master's in divinity at Trinity Evangelical up in Buffalo Grove. And he does a lot of volunteer youth ministry in inner cities. He's a conservative. There isn't much we agree on theologically, which shouldn't be shocking. But in some ways, our core values are in alignment. And mostly we disagree on how to get to the results that we want. But let me share his words here. I'm opening up a can of worms, and it's going to take more than a soundbite to get my point across. I keep hearing people talk about how we no longer have God in our schools, and this is the reason all these terrible things are happening to us. I'm a Christian, but I have some major problems with this way of thinking. Which God would you put back in schools? America was largely founded by Christians, and I have no tolerance for historical revisionism that denies this. The Bible was the reader of the colonial school, and most schools were connected to churches. However, it's not your great-granddaddy's America anymore. We live in a religiously pluralistic society, and we'd better get used to it. Buddhists and Hindus don't believe in a personal deity. Jews don't believe in Jesus as the expression of God incarnate. We have Muslims who worship Allah, and Mormons, and Jehovah's Witnesses, and atheist and agnostic families that make up our society. Whose God do you put back into schools? Even Christians don't agree on how to express their common faith in Jesus. So how exactly would you put God back into schools? And when I pray to Jesus as God incarnate, but would not force anyone to pray this way. How would that ever inspire children, benefit schools, and decrease violence? And we cannot make the Bible a school book. I would not trust a non-Christian teacher to explain it to my children in a way that squares with my beliefs. And I'd rather they don't even try. I cannot imagine how we bring God into schools without violating the freedom of religious expression, which, by the way, is God-given free will. Can someone please tell me how we do that? So what do? We teach values again in schools, lofty ideals and ethics that come from the Bible and other books of faith. We teach respect, love, compassion, fairness, peace, forgiveness, and we model it through our teachers and administrators. We take children on field trips. We do service projects, discuss universal values in meaningful conversations. We create zero tolerance policies for disrespect, violence, abuse, and bullying. But this still won't cure what ails us. Our society is disconnected. Community is going away. We don't even know our neighbors, so how could we possibly care for them? When I was in seminary, a young man in our small school lit himself on fire in an attempted suicide. One of the administrators laid responsibility at all of our feet and said we had relinquished our power and responsibility to prevent this. I was incensed at his comments at the time. Now I agree with him. I don't believe what we need is a whole bunch of new laws to control guns, and I don't carry an NRA card for this perspective. Laws cannot fix what ails us, and neither will arming teachers. This act was a random, senseless act of violence, and perhaps the only person who could have prevented it was his mother, and she missed her chance to do so. We may never know why. I believe the best we can do is to strengthen our families, church communities, and get back to basic human compassion for the people we meet every day, especially the mentally ill and the disabled. I am my brother's keeper, and my faith tells me that. What does yours tell you? So for a brief moment, I thought my brother was a Unitarian, and then I realized that's probably not going to happen. But nonetheless, he's right. We're disconnected. We are so busy putting ourselves in an us versus them box that we forget that in essence we are we. We are citizens of our communities of the world. We are responsible for ourselves, and we must also act as role models for others, as I throw in a little Aristotelian virtue ethics for my philosopher friends in the audience. And yes, we are also responsible for our brothers and sisters, not responsible for their actions, but responsible to them, to help them, to love them, to support them, and to be role models for them. Theodor Heschel said, "Some are guilty, but all are responsible," when he was referring to the Holocaust. We may not be the ones who have inflicted pain or suffering, but ultimately we are responsible due to our silence or unwillingness to act or get involved. We must walk the talk and live our lives as good examples of what it means to be good or holy or sacred or whatever word you choose to use as a theist or an atheist. They say it takes a village. Hell yeah, it does. Dr. King says we must work passionately to understand the system that has created this divide and work hard to cross that divide, to stand hand in hand and pledge to work together across aisles, across differences, to be our brother's keeper, to care fundamentally for the value and dignity of every human life. And let me bring you to another issue about which my brother and I have had many impassioned and challenging conversations. He and I differ in many ways on the abortion issue. This is a pretty controversial topic, obviously, and one we all struggle with, I'm sure. For him, he wants the complete obliteration of abortion, except when the mother's life is at stake, right here, right now, in this moment. And I would ideally love to see that in time, but I understand that that's a challenge. I would love to live in a society where no woman is sexually abused or coerced to have sex, and all babies are born into loving families, however that family is defined, with open arms. This is inherent in my view of the world as a Buddhist and as a Unitarian, that life is sacred, but the decision to end a pregnancy is one no woman ever, ever takes lightly. Unfortunately, because this is not the society we live in, I stand firmly pro-choice. Our society, our way of life, the way we devalue people who are walking, living, and breathing tells me we will not get to a place of valuing all life here in now, in this moment. But, you know, how can we value the unborn and make such an absolute statement that abortion should not exist when we live in such a separate and isolated life from each other, emotionally, physically, and spiritually, especially when we care so little for living beings walking the planet now? How can we say we value life when we don't care for those in need? We turn a blind eye to pain and suffering. We choose to shun the mentally and physically disabled, and we choose to make enemies of those who are different from us. The nuns on the bus are right. You can't stop caring about the unborn once they are born. If you say you value life, you have to practice that in all aspects of life, in how we talk and how we care for others, by eliminating wars and violence and abuse and the death penalty. But when talking heads in the media blame September 11th on the gays and lesbians, and Ann Coulter calls people who disagree with her retarded, this is not a society that cares, sounds like it cares, about humanity, our neighbors, or our brothers and sisters. But don't despair. I believe that Dr. King's message and vision does live on and has spread like wildfire. Even if the fire may have dimmed, the embers burn true, and there is a breeze, I think, that is feeding that fire. Yes, there's a division, but I also know that there is love and community and caring about our fellow humans, because I have seen it, I have experienced it, and I know this to be true without a doubt. If you were here for Sally Olt's memorial service a few weeks ago and helped prepare for it, you know there is love and community. If you've ever worked a fourth Saturday luncheon, you know there is love and community. If you've ever painted a wall or screwed in drywall or put up siding in East St. Louis, you know there is love and community. Globally, it may seem so difficult to understand and to get our heads around this tension, this division, but locally I know that one small act has a very amplified effect. Smiles are contagious, good deeds begat good deeds, and paying it forward is a way of life. We should think globally and act locally. We may never understand why these tragedies occur, and I'm not going to get all cliche and say things happen for a reason, because bottom line, sometimes things happen for no reason at all. Even in that random pain and every experience I have, I learn something new about myself and others. I also know that these tragedies don't define me, and as they don't define us either as a people. Dr. King's dream for equality and justice, that's for all men, all people created equal. And in that paradigm, we're beholden to each other to protect that right. As Unitarians, through examination of our core values, we are called to carry on Dr. King's dream, to fight for justice and equality, to respect the inherent worth of all, to respect others' different paths. Whether we reflect on the murder of three young girls in a church in Alabama in the 1960s, or the massacre of 28 precious lives in Newtown, Connecticut in 2012, or the death of beloved members of our community, we continue to fight always for justice, for equality, for those who have no voice. We exemplify those values that Dr. King espoused: nonviolence, love, respect, and we march on, no matter how heavy the load, because someone is always there to help us carry the burden, because we are our brother's keepers. So please keep marching, my friends.